This is the beginning of Class 8.
Sanshi Bhagi Shushin Etat Shan Vira Vinshi Nyende Kempati Sange Shindu Mitte Kuvaki Jogunanda Shiva
and not any. It's a good to have a blessing come along, but if you obviously if you don't have that particular virtue, it's impossible. It cannot happen. So it doesn't matter. You know, you can run around to all these initiations, but if you don't have that particular virtue, it's logically impossible for it to happen, and it won't happen. And you can see many people that it didn't happen to, apparently. Okay.
So in terms of taking initiations, if you guys don't bother?
No, it's a great blessing, but if you don't go in with the three principal paths, and particularly if you don't water those flowers with the three principal paths, it's impossible. It won't have any result. It'll be nice, we'll have a small blessing number. Maybe in 20,000 lives you might whatever. But cannot have much effect. It's like throwing a seed into a desert. Yeah, it's possible something could grow. It won't last. It won't be strong. It's logically impossible. You already know that. Logically, you have to do something which affects all beings, or it won't work. It cannot work. So we're going to go through the methods of generating, or the methods of getting bodhicitta, because now you know you need it. And it's in your text. I'll give you the Tibetan page if you want to follow. It's on the whole thing that we're going to do today is on page 45 in the Tibetan. And I'll draw that number 45. The 5 looks like a 4. It screwed me up for years. So be careful. And there are two methods for getting bodhicitta. Two methods for achieving this state of mind. And it's a very special state of mind. It's a wish for Buddha, but the day you get it, you'll know. It'll be like a dynamite. You know, it's not an easy thing. It's a very difficult thing to get it. So the first step, the first of the two methods is called this. If you get too warm, it's going to turn up hard. If you get too warm. So please say, Dakshin.
Dakshin.
Nyamje. Okay. There are two ways to get bodhicitta in your heart. Two ways to get the wish for enlightenment. This is the first. Dog means, do you know what kind of dog?
Dog me?
Yeah.
I.
Yeah,
so.
I. Me. Okay. Shin is the opposite.
Self and others.
Others. All other. Dog means self. Shin means other. Other people. Other beings. Myam means equal. And J means exchange. This is a meditation, what they call exchanging self and others. And it was particularly strong, taught by Shantideva. And it's sort of putting yourself in someone else's shoes. It's pretty much that. It's a little more complicated. But it's that you pretend you are the other person and you try to imagine what he wants and not what you want. And I try to pretend I'm Arjuna and I'm sitting in the chair and Michael is talking. And I'm hoping he doesn't go too late this time. And I hope he speaks more slowly and I hope he says something clear. And so if I have Dakshin Nyamje, I pretend I'm you. I try to think what you're thinking. And I try to do things to serve you. To make you happy. Not make me happy. I put your happiness. It's not exchanging self and others, it's exchanging your happiness and my happiness. I put your happiness as my number one job. I'm worried about your happiness. Yeah. So I trade. You give me your happiness, I give you my happiness.
Do you expect mine to do your happiness?
No. So I'm only worried about... I'm only thinking what you would like. I'm only thinking what would make you happy.
Do you take on your suffering?
No. It's not in this meditation like that. It's more that I just... It's not that I change myself with her, which is what the word, you know, people translate it as exchanging self and others. It's exchanging my concern for myself with a concern for herself. So that I'm worried about what makes you happy. I'm thinking about what makes you happy. I trade my thinking about what makes me happy with thinking about what makes you happy. And I'm trying to think, what does Ujira need right now? What does she want right now? What will make her happy right now? And of course, the worrying mostly about ultimate happiness. How can I stop Ujira from dying? How can I stop Ujira from getting sick? How can I help her get away from her samsara? I'm worrying about that. I'm thinking about that. That's exchanging my thoughts. Yeah.
You just started to touch on my question. The emphasis should be on the ultimate happiness, right? If somebody, for instance, got their way by lying all the time, and then they were happy about that because they were putting themselves ahead, you don't mean to sit there and contemplate, geez, you know, how can I help this person lie even more, or something like that.
Yeah, of course, sir. Yeah, I want to make you happy in a real way. Not little happy. Little happy if maybe I give you some money, or I give you some food or something like that. So I'm trying to think what will really help you. What will get you out of your own samsara?
But, Michael, I don't know, because the wish to help others has to be together with the skillful means, like when they say, right, to use, to be skillful in anything. Otherwise, it turns into a disaster. Even if it happens to me, you know, you try to talk Dharma to some people, and then a month later, with what you said about Dharma, with good intention, maybe it turned into something awful that generates power trip, so I don't know.
What do you say to that? Think about karma, laws of karma. Answer him according to the laws of karma.
Well, I think your motivation has a lot to do with
it. I mean, you generally help someone. No, somebody had a disaster. As a result of your teaching,
someone had to dance because they misinterpreted what you said, or because you were saying that you taught it incorrectly.
No, let's say you taught it correctly.
They
still
have
a bad result.
It's from their side.
I see, and they still had a. Well, the result isn't connected to your teaching of the Dharma. It has nothing to do with it.
Teaching the Dharma is a good deed. It must have a certain karmic result. The definition of a good deed. And if they have a bad result from it, it cannot come from teaching the Dharma. It's just like lying to make money in business. It's the same thing. So I was telling your wife the truth, and she gets angry at you.
Yeah, when they say to be skilled, it seems that you need some special skill, even in talking Dharma, even
They say, ultimately, you can't teach Dharma unless you're a premier. I mean, ultimately, you don't know. You can't really help other people until you're a Buddha. Because a Buddha can read the other person's mind. He can see their future lives. He can see their past lives. He knows exactly what will be the best thing to say. In fact, he doesn't even think like that. Whatever he says is automatically the best thing to say because of his virtue. So ultimately, the ultimate skillful means is to be a Buddha, and that's why you have to have Bodhisattva. There's an argument in the debate ground whether you can even help anybody without them.
Sometimes it seems like, I don't know, Jesus was saying, Father, forgive them because they don't know what they are doing.
Right? Yeah.
So, talking about with people about Dharma, sometimes it seems like talking with drunkard, and the next week maybe they switch around and they say, what did you tell me about that thing? And you gave it as a secret or something like this, and it turned into something nice.
But there's a thing that you'll study. When you reach debating, when we do logic, which I should be done in the next course, but I'm not going to do it because I don't want to lose everybody. Logic is hard. I mean, logic is dry. We have to do it first. Before we're allowed to study scripture, we're supposed to do logic. What's a good reason? But actually, when you study that, maybe in the third or fourth course, you're not allowed to present an argument to a person if he doesn't already accept every part of it. But he just didn't figure out the conclusion yet. It's very interesting. I'm not allowed to debate with you if you don't already accept what I'm telling you. but you just didn't see the connection.
Mm-hmm.
That's very interesting. Not allowed to teach you anything that makes you have to jump or have faith or believe in me, because then I can tell you anything. You'll go out and talk to the next guy who says that killing is a virtue, and you'll do it.
But you first have to discover whether or not somebody does accept it.
You have to go
down
until he reaches what he believes.
Right.
And then you have to build from that. You're not allowed to start a debate up here if his beliefs are down there. You have to go down to his beliefs. Way, way down to his basic, something that he can accept himself, that he already accepts himself. And then you have to build your argument up from there. And if you jump ahead, and if he's supposed to draw a conclusion, if he's supposed to agree with you before he's reached the good reasons for it, I'm giving you bad logic. I'm not teaching you right. It's very interesting. I'm guilty, according to the rules of logic.
That's teaching to capacity in a way.
Yeah, that's
the same concept.
And if I don't do that, the fallacy, the conclusion is not true according to Buddhism. Isn't that interesting?
Because
if I don't take the argument down to your beliefs, the argument is false. It's interesting. Trying to prove emptiness logically to Chandrakirti is an incorrect argument, for example. It's very interesting. It's one of the seven fallacies of logic. I can't try to prove something to someone who already believes it. If I try, I'm speaking a mistruth. My statement is not logical. For instance,
there was, that's a mundane thing that comes in my mind right now, but Friedrich Nietzsche, the philosopher,
yes,
said that thinking, people think that thinking is really a way of feeling more than ever, you know. So you feel in a certain way, henceforth you start thinking in a certain way. It's not just the reverse, like most people think. So it seems that to plug into the Dharma, you have to have some sort of sensitivity that nobody can build on you, you know, that it's automatic. You have to be ready in a certain way to absorb his teaching.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you don't get them.
People,
especially if you have teachers that they don't have any skillful means. Like,
there's a famous thing about the lotus doesn't open until the sun comes up. I mean, the Buddha, if the person's not ready, the Buddha will not come to that world. If no one's ready, that's one of the reasons given for why the Buddha pretended to die. Because there was nobody in the world that could grasp what he was saying at that point any longer. That's what it was.
Isn't it said somewhere that if you really try to teach or present Dharma, and you're not a good teacher, that it's sort of non-virtuous, non-virtuous, because you're doing a disservice to the Dharma, if you're actually giving people incorrect views and incorrect information?
I think only time I can remember anything like that is in the Bodhisattva realm. Like, if you teach, for example, emptiness to a person who's not yet ready, and especially if you teach secret Buddhism to someone who's not ready, then, if you've heard them.
Yeah, I know that, but I thought it was just on a very general level.
I can't remember that.
You misrepresent Buddhism, you're looking at this.
Yeah, if you don't know what you're saying.
No, yeah, sure. It's a country golf course.
Well, if it were, we couldn't talk about it. Okay, let's go.
I'll be brief. On the meditation of exchanging self and others for their ultimate happiness.
Start with small ones.
Yeah, I know, but I'm saying,
and it's appropriate.
Back to the business person who is very happy because they lie all the time and they think they're getting ahead.
Yeah.
That meditation might result in you thinking about them in a way that will temporarily make them feel hurt rather than happy, which is to try to get them off the addiction of lying, and they don't see that right away, so they might feel, oh my gosh, my lies are being uncovered. You know, ultimately will help them, that sorrow about that may help them.
Yeah.
So,
right? This is skillful.
Yeah.
Okay, so we go. This is presented in Shantideva. It is fantastic in that book. I mean, were you there when we said that? Or another one? But
which one?
It's in, when you taught it in Shantideva.
Yeah, last summer, a couple of summers ago, you taught it.
Years ago. And it took he taught it for 8 years. I mean, the whole book. And if you get good at this, you get confused who you are. You know, if you meditate on this well, you start to get, am I friend or am I Michael? You know, you start to, because all I'm thinking about is what you want and what's good for you. And I begin to forget about myself. The karma of that is funny. The karma of that is that I get whatever I want. It's funny. You know, really you're trying to help them. But the harder you try to help someone else, the karma of that is that you start to get pleasant results.
Yeah, this statement, is it correct to relate it to the fact that the sense of the self is false? Sense for, you know, most of the time in my life I always thought me is me, but it's not me, it's anybody else. So the fact then, the identity is really a false principle to start.
It's a start. You can start like that. But the meaning of self, which we'll do next week, has a different meaning. It's not what you normally think. When Buddhism says no self, it's a very delicate question, and we'll talk about it next week. But it's not what you think. And, you know, if we all survive till next week, you'll find out. The idea, for example, the word for self, the table has that. I should say the table doesn't have that. You see? It's really the self-nature of things. It's not the identity of a person, Nitya or Michael or something like that. It's not that. And we'll talk about it. We'll get to it next week. Okay, so Dakshin Yamde we're not going to talk about. And you don't have to know it. Okay? No. This book concentrates on the second method. Okay, this is the first method. I think Western people find the first method easier and more attractive. But I've found that go work on a method that doesn't seem that it would be naturally good for you, and sometimes you find very incredible results. So we're going to work on the second method. And the book, in the book, he doesn't teach this. He says you can get Buddhahood either way. And he says, Nyeparke. Nyeparke means you will. You will get bodhicitta. If you use either method you want to use, it's okay. You will definitely get bodhicitta. Okay? We're not going to use that one so much. That's from Shantideva. And in this course, in this 5-year course, we will cover his book. It will probably take 2 or 3 courses. We will cover the Bodhicharmata. The Bodhisattva's way of life. Okay. We'll do the book. Do the whole book. And we'll do it.
It's nice in there also.
Yeah. It's really nice. And if you need one book in your life, if you need one book for your office, right? That's the one.
Is this method the same as the loving gaze?
No.
That's a different means.
And he doesn't get into it.
Says it's secret.
Okay. Here's the second method.
Michael, what you said before about when you go to help other people and benefit the people before yourselves and naturally have whatever you need come back to you, even is that even at the mundane level if you're not working to help homeless people, say?
Yeah.
Even at that mundane level?
Yeah. It's especially, I mean, it takes time, right?
Yeah.
At the quickest, it can happen later in your life. You know, unless it's an incredibly powerful person. But normally, in fact, you see that where you see that explanation is in the tantric writings of Shangyam Rinpoche Dzogchen, who was the Lama to the Emperor of China, and brought Buddhism, helping Buddhism to Mongolia. But who is he, by the way, a monk? I mean, he was the formula. So it's very interesting. You know, his commentary on the secret teaching gives what I've seen is the most beautiful presentation of how that happens. So please say Gyunde.
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 Gyunde. Gyunde. Gyu, which is without the na sound. Na sound comes from this, but I'm not going to go into it much. Gyu means cause. Cause. Jay means result. Mengat means advice. Personal advice. So this meditation is called an advice.
What's Jun?
Jun means 7, number 7.
Okay.
So
So there's a way to get bodhicitta, and you can do it. If you try it, you'll get it. If you don't try it, you won't get it. Right? Le nyepa.
Le
nyepa. Le ma chepa dhamma chepa. Right, what's that mean? Remember? Ma chepa dhamma chepa. Remember? Ma che, ma che. If you don't do, you don't get the result. That's the principle of karma. You know that. You learned it. You don't, I promise, if you don't do it, you won't get it.
But if you did it a long time ago, you can sit now and just wait for the result.
Yeah. Okay, you, everybody have that?
Yes.
Menga, is that one person or one advice from that? One is a person. It's not a person.
Oh, no, nothing like, not like that. Not does mean speech, but menga is an idiom. It doesn't have a real break. You can't really break it down.
So, can you give us that in like a sentence?
Yeah, it is, this, it is the advice of seven steps for training yourself in bodhicitta. And those seven steps are cause and effect. Each one causes the next one. That's the big meaning of cause and effect. But we're going to see. It's a little bit more complicated than that. I think I wrote in the, I don't know how we translate it, the seven step instruction. Cause and effect.
Method.
7-part cause and effect instruction.
Okay. You happen to know, all you guys don't care for nothing. The Tibetan Chinese students are very thrilled to be talking about 2 or 3 words in each step. They almost died on these tables.
And they sat down and they started writing and they just one or two of them just fell asleep. They spent like 6-7 hours trying to write. I guess it was a little too much. It's the first time I ever taught this course, so I don't have to learn just how to judge how much I get. Okay, please say marche.
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 Ma, the ma without the ra, means mama. Same in every language. Mother. Ra, the ra there means as your mother. And she means recognize. She means recognize. I'm going to spend a little time on this because if I don't, the rest won't come. Because this is cause and effect, cause and effect, cause and effect. This one has to be there before the rest can trigger. And it's very difficult. It's called recognizing that everyone has been your mother. It's very, very difficult. Especially for people in Western countries who we grew up thinking that you know, one life to live, Miller life, you know. To accept this, you have to accept that you had a past life. Not only that, you have to accept that your past lives are countless. There's no beginning to your past lives. To accept this first one, without the first one, you can't have the other six, right? You must accept that you had a past life. And you must accept that one had a past life. That one had a past life. And that one had a past life. That there's no beginning. And I've read a lot of scriptures about it, and the main one is the Pavanavartika of Dharmakirti, second chapter. We debate it every winter for a month. And in there, he says, and in the Lamrim, Chemo, he says there's only one proof for past life. I mean, you can say, I remember your past life. He says, you can't really accept that as proof. I mean, some extraordinary people may remember. We can't accept it because we can't see that. As I said, it's not a good argument for us because we don't believe in the parts of his statement. There's no way for us to confirm what he's saying. There's only one way for a non-Buddha or a person without a good understanding of emptiness, a direct understanding of emptiness, to see his past lives. And that's with logic. You cannot see your past lives directly at this point. And then if you say you believe in past life and you don't know this argument, according to Buddhism, you're lying. You don't know what you're saying. I'm not lying, but you really don't understand what you're saying. And it's a big thing in Buddhism. When you study logic, you'll see that if you're a Buddhist scholar, if you're a Buddhist thinker, you're not allowed to say something is true if you haven't seen it with logic. At least with logic. At least with reasoning. If you haven't seen it, you're not allowed to say, I believe in a Buddha. You've never seen a Buddha. You don't know he exists. You've never seen your past life. You don't know if they exist. You have some feeling that you think it's true, but it's no more than a feeling or a little bit of logic there. You might as well say you believe in God, which according to Buddhism doesn't exist. So you have to be careful. So what is the proof for past life? It's very, very simple, and according to all the books, it's very hard to believe. It's very hard to see. You have to think about it a lot. You won't believe it the first time it's in. Okay? And Buddhism says you won't. You shouldn't. And you won't. So don't feel bad if you don't. But think about it. Okay? It's true. And the reason you don't believe it is because you grew up in this country mostly. It's not because it's not logical or not true. But it sounds illogical. So
everyone in an Asian country believes it and understands it?
Many people, most people say in Tibetan culture, What my religion teachers in university used to call a gut predisposition. They believe, as you believe in God, you know, they may not understand it. They may not know anything about it, but they believe in it. And you believe in God. Probably the object which they believe in doesn't exist any more than God. I mean, their concept of what a past life was may not exist, but they do believe. Because their parents used to talk about it all the time. And you believe. You have certain beliefs which are crazy that you just grew up with. You know, God, believing in God. And I have another two examples. I can think of like alcohol. That alcohol is in any way desirable or chic or fun or happy or can have any good result for you. Pornography like that. I can think of that. You know, our culture accepts it. Our culture almost worships it. On some level or another. It's just harmful. It's just wrong. It shouldn't be. But we grew up, we grew up in a culture where we thought, well, it's okay, it's kind of nice in a movie, you know, and you have a few minutes scene, you know. It's wrong. It's harmful. We have certain predispositions. We have certain beliefs. I mean, 100 years ago, there was a debate. Thomas Jefferson, 200, I saw the letters. Thomas Jefferson writing letters to Washington or something. Are black people humans or not? You know, they were debating, are they animals or humans? You know, it was a serious argument at the time. And now we just say, it's crazy. We don't believe. You have certain beliefs that are just, don't make any sense at all. And you have them because you grew up here. And 100 years from now, they'll say, boy, those crazy people, they believe in this. It's so silly, you know. Yeah.
I did a polemic question, maybe. When you were defining the quality of a student, right? You said something very beautiful to me, saying that a student has to be intelligent because he moves beyond all the beliefs of his group or his society or his country for which
he can define what's good and what's bad.
So it's not a matter of folklorism here, you know, in your group, they believe in reincarnation, so you automatically believe it is more simple.
So here we go, here's the argument, okay? Boy, built it up, man, okay. And it comes in the book. He says, you're watching me, you are aware of this class. You're thinking about this class. You're thinking about this room. And you're aware. This room. You have a consciousness, you have an awareness of this room. According to Buddhism, that awareness has to come from a cause which was similar stuff. That's very important, similar stuff. We call Nyerlingi Gyu. It must come, everything must come from a main cause, I'm talking main cause, that was made of the same kind of stuff. And physicists, Western science people, they agree that matter has to come from matter. Physical things have to come from physical things. They agree with that. They say that physical things are indestructible. They say that matter cannot be destroyed. It changes into different shapes. It's John's Stillwell today. Tomorrow it's dust, then it's worm food, then it's bird food, then it's human food, and then it's a human. Right? Yeah. Same dust, the same dirt. Okay? Matter is indestructible. Matter cannot be destroyed. Western science said that. So the stuff of John Stillwell's body has to come from stuff, which is physical. And according to Buddhism, that means it has color and shape, for example. What about the stuff of your consciousness? You now are aware of this room. So I asked Frank, you're aware of this room. You have an awareness. Where did that awareness come from?
It came from our previous awareness.
Yeah, I mean, awareness is coming in the door. Which came from awareness of being on this beautiful street out here. Which came from awareness of a subway. Right? It has to. It has to.
Well,
awareness.
How come it couldn't just start from when you were born?
This is we'll talk about it. We'll talk about it. The main, when I'm presenting this argument, right, I have to bring it down to your, the closest belief you have that I can get to. It's very important to believe this argument. You have to separate mind and body. You have to realize that mind and body are completely separate. They are different stuff. Forget it. You can't. You know, you don't think about it. That's your problem. Your mind is invisible. You can't touch it. You can't smell it. You can't cut it. You can't burn it. Nothing. Okay? You can put a seed in it, and you can get the result later, which is why you're studying. And you believe that, or you wouldn't be here. You believe that this invisible thing that no one can see, I can't see your mind, you can't see your mind, it's even hard to say where it is. Your mind extends to your arm because if you pinch yourself, you have feeling, which is a mental, entity, it's mental stuff. Feeling is mental. So my mind must stretch out to around, there's a debate in the Abhidharma, does it go to the end of my fingernails or not? Okay, I mean, somehow it's right around here, it stops. Right? But I can also think of my office that I was in a few hours ago. So my mind can reach there also. My mind is there too.
Your personal space, as it were.
Yeah. So it's very weird. I mean, you just don't think much about your mind. You take it for granted. You can't see it. It's aware. Somehow it's lit up. Somehow it has some kind of energy to know. And how does that happen? How can it happen? Is it part of your body? You know, is it part of the skin or the bones or the eyes? Or is it something that stays there for a while? You know, and if you think about it, you'll start to see that. You know, you just don't think much about your mind. That's the point. You know, people don't go in the subway and worry about where's their mind.
Yeah, it's not.
You worry about where's your wallet, you know?
Where your mind is.
Okay?
Hang on a second.
So it's very... It's very subtle. First, you have to realize that your mind and your body are separate. They're different stuff. Come on. Body you can cut. Body you can burn. Body you can divide. Body you can touch. You know, stuff. Matter you can... But not mind. Mind is totally beyond your reach. You can set off an atom bomb. It won't touch the mind. Mind is beyond matter. The mind is beyond physical stuff. It's free of physical stuff. We'll be debating this. Let me present the argument, then you defeat it. And I don't say, I don't believe I can convince you. And the Lamrim Chamu and the logic text say, this point is difficult and you cannot perceive it on the first hearing. You have to think about it. At least give it some thought. Right? Wherever your thought is. Okay? So the argument goes like that. The stuff of your body and the stuff of the walls and the stuff of the bricks and the stuff of the dirt and the earth is one thing. The stuff of the mind is a different thing. It's different stuff.
Ask a question about
that. Right. And it has to come It has to come from mental stuff. What she said. If you are thinking now, if you can see me now, if you can think about me now, that thinking came from the thinking you had when you came in the door. And if you meditate like this, it's a very beautiful meditation. If you get good at meditating, if you meditate like an hour a day, and you really get good at shamatha, you can follow your thoughts backwards. Very far. Very far. You know? It's really interesting. Because all your thoughts come from association. You know, why does your mind jump to something next? What causes your mind to go to something next? What determines what your mind goes to next? It's very interesting, and you can trace that back. If you get good at meditating and very quiet, you can follow your thoughts back a long way, like back to your early childhood, even very far.
Even to your birth.
Maybe. So, you can... What I'm trying to say is that whatever awareness you have now had to come from awareness. It can't come from stuff. The stuff has to be mental. Stuff that mental stuff comes from has to be mental.
There's nothing alien about these concepts in the West. No, I mean, this is where soul and spirit come
in. No, not really. This is why you come to school. This is why you trust, you believe, that your mind is a stream. That's why you send your children to school. If you didn't believe it, if you didn't believe that something placed in that stream in first grade will float down to third grade, you know, you wouldn't send him to school. You don't say, I'm sending Johnny to school to get a seed put in his mind so it can stream down to third grade and come out. But that's exactly what you believe, or you would not send Johnny to school. You believe that the mind streams on. You believe that. And you believe that you can put a seed in it now and have a result in 3 years or 20 years when he graduates from college. You believe that. We believe that, or we wouldn't have education. You wouldn't send someone to school. We don't say it that way. We don't say, oh, I'd like Johnny to have some good seeds put in his mind stream so that, you know, 20 years downstream he gets some good results. But you believe it. That's why you put him in school. Because you believe they can put some knowledge in his mind that will come out later. The odds, what's that? That's just one in a trillion odds. I'm talking countless. I'm talking countless trillions, of course. Everything has been. Countless times. It's beginningless. Think about it.
Well, the only thing new is...
You know, when I said beginningless, you just have to think a million years. You know, maybe we're around Jurassic Park or something.
I didn't think big.
I'm thinking beginningless, but then when
the
I think about...
The combinations are infinite.
Something like... America.
No.
Universe.
Okay, suppose there's a planet. We don't call it America, but there's a Miss America... Or there's a Miss, you know, Dunker contest. But there's been trillions of those, because one of them was called America, and there's been trillions of those. It's everything, really. Everything has happened. I have been everything. I've been everything countless times. It didn't help me. I'm still here. I'm still in some stuff. Which is what? Definition, please? It's a bummer. No, all I have to prove to you, all I have to prove to you is that this moment of awareness had to come from a moment of awareness from which it turned into. And then the rest is easy. The rest is cake. It's okay.
Mind on a bunch of mind, too.
So then, conversely, if you've never had an awareness of something, you can't perceive it. For instance, if we invoke the Buddhists to come into this room, surely they will come. They will be here. We won't have an awareness of that because we've never had an awareness of seeing a Buddha face to face before.
That's a big argument. I don't want to... I mean, I'm not capable of...
Well, I mean, but that's also then limiting as well, that you are limited to awarenesses like the kind that you've had before.
That's pretty much...
So then how do you get new awarenesses if you haven't had them before?
They fly lands on a piece of cow pie. The fly gets enough merchants because he circumambulated the scooper by sheer accident.
Random circumcision.
No, that's a true story. I know. Thank you.
So then how does that...
Now I'm open for debate. Anyone can argue.
How does that explain the actual existence of anything then? So, or
We'll get there.
Why?
Well, I mean, that's a big story. Next week. See, I didn't say 4 years from now.
This is my usual answer.
I'm just worried someone will actually be around 4 years
from now. Mind is you.
The mind that you were talking before, this is part of the five skandhas.
Yeah, number five.
So, I have difficulties there because you say we are the aggregate of five hips, right? Now, when this thing disaggregates, they go everyone on his own, we are no more in that.
But they don't go on their own. You lose the physical part, but the mind continues. And the mind always has five functions with it. Five functions cannot be wiped out of the mind.
In the mind.
Whatever it's feeling. If you are thinking, you have feelings.
The body.
And if you are thinking, you have discrimination.
And the senses. There are the senses in the mind.
Okay. Even without a physical body, you never, ever stop feeling. If you're mental, it's happy as hell.
But one of the skandha is the senses?
No, it's not
feeling. Discrimination.
The mental function of feeling.
Right.
The skandhas are what I call one of those mangled ideas. Okay? I mean, when you learn the skandhas well, which is the subject of the first chapter of the Abhidhamma, you know, then you'll realize that half of what you ever heard about them was ridiculous.
So what are the other three feeling discriminations?
Four, all of them.
We'll get
the
other three.
Okay, the other three. We can continue. Heard them four.
Second chapter of the Abhidhamma. And by the way, the other schools have a different presentation. They say there's like 10. But I can say, for example, Sempa, which is movement in the mind, anytime the mind moves, the mind is always moving, period. That, in fact, is the definition of karma. Yes.
I want to go back to when you were talking about the physical body coming from physical stuff.
Yeah, and the mind comes from the mental
stuff.
I call it stuff, but you know it's not stuff. You can't throw it out.
Being distinct and separate. My concept of physical stuff is that it is comprised of continually smaller and smaller particles down to a most subtle level. Well, to a most subtle level, a most subtle level of energy or whatever you want to call it. And if that subtle level of energy is permeating everything, mind, physical body, whatever, and it's the coarse level that we identify as physical stuff. And at the subtle level, we identify as mental stuff.
The Vaibhashika school, which is the Abhidhamma school, tries to say something like that. And we'll get to that. They do have that argument.
So it's not
their definition of ultimate reality is something which can no longer be reduced by the mind. Which is kind of what you're saying.
Yeah.
Hey, you get down to some atom.
Some
atom,
universal aspect.
Have some universal energy down there. And that's actually their belief of what ultimate reality is. We'll get into it next week.
Not what you're saying.
Not 4 years from now.
Not what you're saying.
Yeah, actually the high schools don't accept that. But it's such a natural thought that it is a Buddhist position. That idea is very similar to the Abhidhamma position. So we don't say it's not useful. It's very useful. And you build on it.
But they are not that. It is distinct, separate.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you can tell. I mean, physical stuff, for one thing, it's what we call tobrik. It's blocks of objects. Mind doesn't. We can all, you know, I say, put everyone think about this top of this pen, and all the minds are there, sitting there. I can put up a needle, and all our minds can be on the tip of that needle. It's quite nicely. Not like the subway. You know, the subway is physical. You know, you get 100 people in and you're all like that. And this guy's stepping on your feet. Mind is not like that. Think about how different mind is. I mean, you don't think about it. That's the thing. Your mind can go to your childhood. Your mind can immediately go to Alaska. You know, when we started meditating with this Burmese teacher, which the Dalai Lama sent him to teach us. And the first thing he says, we're going to be here in 10 days. You're going to meditate for all day. You cannot move. Do not think about monkeys. So anyway, you know, the only thing that gets in your life is monkeys. You can't get monkeys. Why do you think that? It's so funny. Your mind can go anywhere.
So, what you're saying, though, this is physical stuff. You can touch it. You can.
We call it public.
It's made of molecules. It's made of atoms. So are radio waves or whatever.
We call that physical.
But they don't block. You can't touch it. You can't.
They do block.
Sure, they.
They're just very subtle.
That's a
honey
lot
more.
Okay, one more argument, then we gotta go on.
Well, I think it's a lot easier to contemplate if you think about the other kinds of beings, the non-samsaric beings, the beings in Nirvana and the Buddhas, okay? They don't suddenly become eternal. They've always been eternal. We've always been eternal. It's just that we have the ignorance of thinking that we're not and thinking that we're going through these different characters that we play over and over and over again. And in that sense, it's the same thing. It's just that they've shed that illusion. And we just keep going around and around, not realizing what we really are or who we really are, in a sense.
So don't go too far. Try to, as an exercise, if you want to, so you have like a month and a half off after we finish, which is short. So think about it. I mean, just you could make a meditation of it. You know, if you meditate quietly, you can follow your mind back. And then it becomes more believable to you because you actually can trace. You get very familiar with how your mind follows certain directions from your past thoughts. Your past thoughts are put in your mind, mental habits, and they tend to push your mind. You know, what makes you think of what you're going to think of next? Did you ever wonder? It's your past.
Oh,
no, it's your past memory.
Does the mind remember everything that ever happened to you?
Yeah, there is a stage in Buddhism, in meditation, where you can remember everything you ever
did. The shamatha.
You can go all the way back. That your mind has been beginningless, after many, many hours of thinking about it, you just fix your mind on it, and you keep it in your mind, and you burn it into your awareness. That's bom. The word, the better word for meditation means that.
But you're making concentration sound more analytical meditation.
It is.
So analytical meditation and concentration are the same thing.
Contemplation.
Yeah.
And then gom is in the three steps, right? Meditation in the three-step process of learning, Buddhist learning, is just burning it into your consciousness by focusing your mind on it over and over again, bringing it up to your mind over and over again, until it's just part of it gets internalized. Okay.
Of course.
We'll do two more real fast.
See, the problem you think in this way, maybe I read this book, I don't know, that just the fact that nobody suppress your life, right, means that they are supporting you somehow.
Who's that?
I mean, in the same line of thinking that everybody has benefits mm-hmm. your life, that's mm-hmm. what they treat you as a mother, treat you her child or children, whatever. You can also think, I don't know if it's appropriate like mm-hmm. this, I have heard it someplace, that since nobody suppress your life, nobody can kill you.
Yeah.
Henceforth, they are supporting you. So
this is the Abhidharma.
There is a reason for love everybody because they support your life.
That's in the Abhidharma. That is correct.
It is correct.
That's real teaching. But we'll get into that. It's a little bit different from that. But that is in the
Abhidharma.
So what I say is, what I do say is that if you get good at this, if you walk, I mean, you walk into a store. You see a guy working, and your reaction to him is to think, he's working, isn't he kind? No. Your reaction to him is very strange. You see a kid, you know, cleaning the floor, and you think, he's ultimately working for me. Isn't he kind? You know, you don't see him as working for money. And you don't see him for any other reason. If you get good at this meditation, your world changes a little bit in a nice way, and you go into a store, someone's working there and you think, boy, he's so kind to be working for me, you know. You go into a bank and the guy, you go to the desk and he's writing up a new account for you and your reaction is, isn't he kind to be spending his precious life serving me right now? You don't think, oh, I'm paying the money, the bank, the money, he has to do it, you know. Your perception begins to change in a very sweet way. And it's true. Yeah. I mean, in a way, he's giving his life for you. He's there in the bank. I'm saying this is a way of looking at it, and it's not incorrect. It's just that we don't tend to think that way. He he's giving up his precious lifetime, the prime of his life, and you're one of the people he's serving, and you begin to think that way, and it's a very weird, it's a very nice, sweet thing, you know. It'll happen, and
Michael,
you'll see it.
Michael, is that like, actually, you may have all kinds of thoughts as to why the person is in the bank. They aren't true. It's the karma that's true. So any thought that you have about why they're in the bank is just sort of a fantasy anyway, so might as well make it a positive one or a healthy one, right?
Well, I guess so. But the fact is that it will happen to you. It will happen to you. I'm not saying go into a bank tomorrow and try to think that way. I'm not saying that. If you get good at this, and it will come. It'll naturally come. You'll go into a bank and you think, or some guy's tailgating you, you'll think, oh, gee, he wants to go somewhere. Let me get out of his way. No, please. You know, it's a weird reaction. You know, normally you're mad when this guy's trying to bump you. I'll slow down. You know, and if you get into this kind of thinking, you're like, oh, please, you know, you want to go, please go. You know, it will happen. And it's very sweet. It's very happy. You get very happy. Okay, Chin Chin. Oh, sorry. I'm going to trick you guys.
English.
That I mean, months from now, this will be a threat card. You don't want it.
At least we'll be awake, you know. When it happens.
Jin Jin. Jin Jin.
So, Michael, can I just pick up on what you were saying? You said, you know, we shouldn't pretend that we're doing this.
Oh, no, but it's not bad to try.
My question was, my natural tendency is to try to just train myself to think that way.
That's
by
right.
Pretending.
That's
is there some other approach?
No,
we can take
no, away? That's fine. That's a good approach. Bodhicitta, there is a pre-Bodhicitta Bodhicitta. They call, I don't know if I mentioned it, it's called sugarcane Bodhicitta.
Yeah.
It's empty inside and sweet on the outside. So it's just, it's called the Chimma. Chimma. Chimma in Tibetan is the word they use for that stupid little white powder milk substitute in the little coffee thing. Coffee dream, you know. what do they call it?
Coffee
made. Yeah, coffee made. In fact, the word is chimma, the word refers to that. It means artificial, fake, chemical, you know, all made, not real milk. And there is that kind of bodhicitta. And it's, you have to get that word first, actually. You pretend that your voice stops that, you know. And you get so good at, you know, you get good at pretending it, and it really happens. It comes true.
Well, so that you can't be a bodhisattva with trimmer.
Oh, no. Okay, so Jin Jin. Jin means kindness. Jin means remember. Remember her kindness. This is remembering your mother's kindness. And it... I've seen classes, I've seen many classes, I've seen many people. I don't like my mother. She wasn't kind to me at all.
People
have that problem. It doesn't refer to whether you like your mother or not. It means whether you like your mother or not, she carried you for 9 months, and it hurt, and it was uncomfortable. And when you came out, it ripped her apart. It hurt a lot. Okay? She gave you that for every moment. Of 9 months she carried you. And her whole thought during that time is about you. She's thinking, what should I eat? What should I do? What shouldn't I do? You know, is he comfortable or not comfortable? I mean, mostly she's thinking for you. And then when you come out, it hurts like hell. And then after that, she's a prisoner. You know, whether she was a good mother or a bad mother, she was stuck with you, you know. Every moment she can't go anywhere. I mean, if you have friends who have babies, you know, you used to call them up and say, let's go see a movie, you know. Now they say, forget it, I gotta watch the kids. You know, and sometimes you can't even finish the conversation. You say, Mommy, I gotta go, bye. It's like, you know, it's true. So whether your mother is good mother, bad mother, forget it. Normally, a mother is stuck with you for, 5 years, 10 years, sometimes 50 years, you know. And she has no peace. She gives up her life for you. Every moment, for the first few years, forget it. She can't let you alone and go out for half an hour. They arrested somebody yesterday, or the day before, for leaving a 2-year-old. You know, they look like normal, you know, yuppies, and they got arrested because they left their kid and went out for a drink. And they arrested them, you know. You know, that's...
Mother, are you?
No, so however you feel about your present mother, I mean, normally, even animal mothers, it's tremendously painful to have, and the, what they gave you was not, there's no one else in this world who will serve you like that, nobody. There will never be anybody. You might get married or whatever, or you might have a close friend. They're not going to do that for you. They're not going to give up every moment of their life and serve you for years. You know, forget it. There's only one who does that. And that's Jinjin. Okay.
I'm putting these three together because they come together.
Jinso. Okay. Jinso. I remember the night my mother died, and I had the distinct feeling in my mind that the only person in this world who cares more about me than me just died. You know, I had that distinct feeling. I just lost a person who loves me more than I love me. Who's worried more about my future than I am, you know. And the only person. You know, I remember that feeling. Okay, Jinso. Mipei kindness. Jin means kindness, and so means pay it back. Number three. It means this. She helped you like that. And she, there's this thing in Buddhism called a fire pit. It's like a big barbecue pit. It's a huge hole, and underneath it has coals. Just red embers. Coals. And you're standing there, and your mother, and you're looking down, and she falls down. She falls in. Then would you move or not? You know what I mean? I mean, would you try to get her out or not? The minute she lands on the coals, she's nowhere to go. Hot coal, burning coal. She steps, she can't get out. I mean, would you do something? You know, I mean, if there were 10 people there, who will jump first? Who will try to help her first? It's not you. You're crazy. You know, if you say, so could somebody come and help my mother? You know, I mean, the responsibility is yours. You know, she served you. You have this relationship with her. You have to help her. You're the one who has to try to jump down and try to help her. You know, it's not like you're gonna wait, you know, and say, oh, I'll call the police. You know, I need someone to help. If you know, if you've been thinking about how kind she was, you will jump. You will do something. And you won't wait for somebody else. You'll do it yourself. That's Tinsel.
So in our Western country, where the top of this, you know, the psychology, they were telling a lot of weird things about the mother and the father, and we absorb, you know, all this.
Yeah, I know. It's unfortunate. It doesn't weigh 1 pound against the tons of time she gave you. You know what I mean? All these little psycho traumas you had or whatever, forget it. I mean, think about someone serving you day and night, moment by moment, for years and years. You know, that's the fact of it, and it's obvious. So anyway, she's down there. She's burning. Are your other mothers in that situation now or not? Like if the guy you meet on the street, let's say my boss, he's quite comfortable. I mean, he brought a crane to put his jacuzzi up to the penthouse that he bought. You know, I remember the debates we had in the office, you know, like, how are we gonna, which crane should we rent, you know? He's gotta get the jacuzzi up to the penthouse, you know, it's a big problem. And we had that argument, we had that talk, you know. So he's comfortable. He's been my mother. He is my mother, okay? Is he in fire? His words. I mean, it's much worse. Much worse than fire. But no, he's in samsara. He is samsara. He is his own samsara. You know, he must die. He must reach a point where he can no longer make any contact with anything he knew before. It's an interesting idea. He'll go across a certain line, and everything he knew before, his wife, his kids, the building we bought, his business, his money, his car, his jacuzzi. When he crosses that line, which he must, when he just crosses that line, it's all black. He can't see anything. Just black. He loses his face. He loses his body. He loses his name. He's in some kind
of dark concept of himself as what he was.
Yeah.
You can't remember. You can't wake up.
He just crosses that line like that, and he's gone. And the sad thing is, he can't turn around and see any of it. You know, he can't even remember very clearly because the death wipes out your it wipes out the surface consciousness. So he can't even. He's in some blackness. He's very scared. At that point, your energy of your body is mixed, is short-circuiting, you know, and you're hallucinating. Everyone normally hallucinates at that point. So he's confused, he's frightened, everything's black, he can't remember anything, he doesn't remember who he is. And he can't turn around and, he can't even remember or see what he was. And he's just gone. And he's in that fire. He is in that fire now. And if he was my mother, then I should try to help him. Try at the risk of my life, I should try to help him. That's Chinsong. Yeah.
Michael, I think this is a good time to mention. Real help doesn't mean throwing yourself in there and burning them too, right? It means intelligently figuring a way of getting them out, number one. And number two, can't we translate this third meditation as developing the wish to repay the kindness of all the mothers that you've had?
Sure, why not?
Is that the way to translate?
Yes.
Okay.
So those are, now I ask you a question, are those three causes back? Yeah. The number one cause, number two.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you don't think he's your mother, you're not going to think about what he did for you. So number one cause is number two. So think about what he did for you, my boss, what he did for me. I have to believe he was my mother. And to want to pay back what he did for me, what do I have to think? I have to think what he did for me. If I don't think he did anything for me, I won't think, oh, look, he took care of me every moment for years, and I should do something for him. I have a responsibility to help him. He was my mother. It's my job to help him. So those are cause and effect, the first three cause and effect. We'll see next, after T, how those three cause number four.
Also, in the literature, quite often, sentient beings are referred to as all the mother beings, for this reason. Yeah, mother beings.
Have some cookies. Good. Sampa means love. Sampa means love. Sanskrit is Maitra. That's the word Maitreya comes from. In fact, Maitreya is called Sampa. His name means love. Maitreya is the next Buddha. Didn't come yet. Shakyamuni was the last one. My chair is number four. Champa.
I have an excellent question. The third Buddha, how do we know anything about him and what he told
us? We have it. He's in the Karma. We have his books. We have some of his books. And actually, there's millions before that. I mean, just in this era. Yuong means pretty or lovely. There's two kinds of jampa. Jampa means the definition of love in Tibetan is the emotion where you're obsessed that this person should get what makes him happy.
The obsession to make another happy.
The obsession to give a person what will make him happy.
And so therefore, in this sense, obsession doesn't have a negative.
No, it's a very positive. It's like an obsession that you must give him what he wants. You must give him what makes him happy. You want to give him all the good things. This is what the definition of love, and you will study that in Pajaparamita.
And this gets back to what Tom was talking about before, which is something that troubles me, is that very often what people want is not what they need.
Oh, yeah, no, that's true. I mean, people might want a gun.
Ultimately, happen.
Well, yeah. I mean, you can get less extreme than that. I mean,
yeah. Well, in Buddhist scripture, it is stated that, I mean, all the lower types of charity, giving, are actually harmful. I mean, if I give you a cookie for the break, I mean, it doesn't help you. It's no benefit. I mean, it's actually...
loaded with cholesterol.
Just more... No, it's not just that. It's just more of samsara. You know? It's not really helping you. But at the beginning, you give people that because it attracts them.
No, but I mean, what if somebody's begging on the street and they...
I like them.
And they're addicts or they just don't want to work or whatever, and you give them money and they go off and they do whatever with it. And you know that.
It's a difficult question. I've not seen many people ask that question. You're not allowed to.
You give them clothes in the cold weather and they go off and sell them. I've had this happen.
But what is your motivation?
But as a Buddhist, you're not allowed to give them anything that they can help themselves with. Like if someone else asks for a gun, or ask for poison if you want to commit suicide, you're not allowed. That's true. But you have to use wisdom. You know, you have to see how much of that is just your laziness that you don't want to do that. You know what I mean? You got to balance it well. I know you're going to tell your love. Okay, you own means lovely. There are several kinds of jhampa. This kind of jhampa means where you look at people and they seem as attractive to you as if you were a mother and they were your only son. Or their only... Your own... Oh, that's good. If you waited like another 15 minutes. No. Thanks. It's good that you came in here. Here's a chair here. You want to sit
here? This kind of jumper or this kind of you?
This kind of jumper. Jumper means love. You all means when you look at a person, you automatically like him as much as if he was your son or your daughter. Your only son or your only daughter. Your immediate reaction to anybody you meet, when you look at them, you feel like you love this person. He's very, very... You see these ugly murderers on TV, you know, every night almost. And he just shot 30 people, and the police are leading him away, and they interview the mother, and they say, tell us about your son. He's a good boy. You see it almost every night. It's funny. You know, I mean, they have this insane love for their children, you know, and they're just...
Michael, again, this Eric Berner, right, the guy who wrote the transactional analysis, he said the scientist that found out that in the brain of every human being, every time that you meet someone, you have one of the six typical reactions. Killing, fighting, being friends, having sex, I don't know, so that
what
would seem
the
natural thing.
What is it says a similar thing, but I don't want to get into it. We'll get to it. So your own jhampa is this kind of insane love that a mother has for a son. I mean, it's just a reaction you have. When you see somebody, they look pretty to you. They look lovely to you. They look very attractive to you, no matter how ugly they are, okay?
Is that the same kindness?
No, it's number four.
No, but I meant three courses four.
Oh, the whole first three, it's explained this way, okay? It's not so, and you got to write that down, because that's part of the question. The first three cause number four. The first three as a group. Cause number four.
So if everybody adopted this, all the cosmetics companies would go out of business. Right?
Definitely the gun companies would go out of business.
So
the weapons maker.
What's the whole meaning of number four?
It means you love people like they were your son. If you, in the future, you have a son, your only son, you're not going to have any more children, it's your only son. You love him like that. When you look at him, he looks so beautiful. Then you have that towards everybody. That's what
mother.
I thought you were seeing everybody as your mother.
They knew your son too, right? Okay, you're on jump on. Next one is.
You think your son or your mother?
Now, the way a mother looks upon their only. Does it have to be son or is that some Asian culture?
Child.
Is it son
child.
Or daughter?
Child.
Child.
A universal.
That's what all of women are. They asked me that in the last class. They They asked me that in the last class, and I said, look, if you've ever lived, Nitya has lived in India, right?
What?
You've lived in India.
Yeah.
In India, a son is you can't understand how important. It's not crazy. It's not sexism. It's money. It's economics.
Yeah. Yeah.
You sell the girl to her husband. You know, you have to pay to have the girl to her husband. The boy can farm. He can carry stuff. He can do all the dirty, heavy physical work. He is Social Security. There is no Social Security in India. If you do not have a son, it's almost certain that when you get older, you will be destitute. And that's the way it works in Asia. So it's that only a son can get a good paying job. That's sexist. Okay? And if you get old and you don't have a son, you can just forget it. You're going to be destitute. It's just normal in India. And you got to go there to see it. There's all these old people and you say, oh, my son died and the daughter-in-law is not supposed to take care of your parents so much.
So the way a mother looks upon her social security.
It's not like that. I'm saying that's why sons are precious, and partly
because they're walking social security.
What's behind that? Where I read that Buddha said that if he accepted nuns, it would cut Buddhism in half.
That it would reduce the length of the Dhamma. I don't know precisely. I haven't studied that very well. You know, you hear things that stick in your mind that are not in the five great books.
Is that not the book?
It is in, no, it is in this. It is
in
the Buddhist
book. It's in that book that says what the Buddha taught.
Yeah, I believe that is a Buddhist teaching. Now, why exactly? I don't want to speculate that. I don't know exactly.
There wouldn't be enough Social Security in the future, I guess.
I believe it has to do with the proximity of monks and nuns, that would make it more difficult for monks to keep their
vows.
I assume that's what I mean. But I don't know for sure. Okay. Nimjay Chambo.
This slide?
Yeah.
We're going to paraphrase this. It's in the book, right?
Yep. By the way, it's a little spread out in the book. You'll have to read a few pages.
No.
The whole section is only 13 pages.
Say
Ningjie.
Ningjie
Chenpo. Ningjie Chenpo.
Ningjie Chenpo.
Ningjie is a beautiful word. Ning means heart. Jie means Lord. Lord of hearts. Lord of hearts. What does it mean? What's the highest emotion? Lord of hearts. It's compassion. That's Karuna. Ningjie. Compassion. And Chenpo means great. Big. Mahakarunam. What's the difference between Chenpo and Ningjie? Lin had a reaction to the definition of love. Which is the desire to give them everything good. What do you guess is the definition of compassion?
That you wish everything good for them?
That's love. Love wants to give.
Okay.
Well, compassion wants to
take away
all their suffering. That's the definition of compassion. You'll get there when you study the perfection of wisdom,
okay.
Which is the next course, so selling point.
What is the meaning of
great compassion. But what is compassion? Compassion wants to take away the problems of other people. Love wants to give them the nice things. Compassion wants to take away the problem. There's a big debate here in the Lamrim text. It says, this is the wrong order. You don't give somebody dinner and then take them out of the fire. Right? You get them out of the fire and then you give them dinner. You know? And the reason for presenting it this way is that the Lama says, well, don't forget I said Yuan. Yuan means what? Pretty, beautiful. Okay? If you don't see the person as beautiful, you won't want us to get them out of the fire. That's why love comes before compassion in this teaching. Sometimes it's reversed. Sometimes compassion has to come before love, because you got to get somebody out of trouble before you give them good stuff. Ningjie Chenpo. The Chenpo, the big, there is compassion, and then there's big compassion. Okay? There's compassion, there's regular compassion, and then there's big compassion. And we'll study that in the Abhidhamma Sutra, which is Hinayana or Mahayana? Abhidhamma school.
Hinayana.
They have the best presentation of compassion you'll ever see.
Wow.
So, you know, be careful about the Hinayana Mahayana stuff. I mean, don't get too caught up in it. Western people get caught up in it. I mean, they have wonderful teachings on compassion. The best ones you'll ever see are in the Hinayana text.
Doesn't mean that Hinayana practitioners
aren't very compassionate. Yeah, I mean, come on. Just mean they don't
have fire. Just don't stay in the house of one for, you know.
Based on experience.
Number
six.
Seven
books. We're up to six.
Yeah.
Six.
The
last one was five.
I'm sorry, you're right. Oops. We'll see why I made the mistake shortly.
And we all knew that that was number
six. Yeah, yeah. Maybe I should get you a number. Say, Faksam?
Faksam.
Number.
Nanda.
Faksam. I love this word. I love this word. It means, Faksam means extraordinary thought, extraordinary state of mind.
Far from the gods, huh?
No, this is Fak. Fak means special or extraordinary. Fak? Not related.
Fak? No, yeah. No relation.
No. Maybe ultimately a million years.
Faksam.
Extraordinary.
Sam means state of mind. Nambat means totally pure. Totally pure, extraordinary state of mind is what?
Dot.
Yeah. Dot means pure, Nam means totally. It's not bodhicitta yet, it's only number six, right? Faksam Nandak does not, the word does not explain what it means. What it means is this. It means, I will get bodhicitta, and I will serve other people, and I will work to help other people, and I don't care if no one else helps me. It's like this personal responsibility. I will save the people around me, and I don't care if nobody helps me. I'll do it myself.
I'll take on the responsibility myself for all of it. Then.
Yeah.
So really it's agreeing to do the work before you get bodhicitta, is it?
Yeah, it's some kind of emotion where you say, I just don't care if nobody helps me. I'm going to do it.
Just before bodhicitta.
I do it myself, yeah. It's a cause for myself. It's a direct cause for myself. It's what turns into bodhicitta. I'll do it myself. Everyone around me, I won't wait for somebody else. I'll do it myself. I'll make them a Buddha. Why? Why is it that the boy at the fire pit had to grab the mother?
Because it was the mother.
It's his mother.
Right.
It's his mother. He's not going to wait for the cousin or the uncle or the. I mean, but he has the. He owes the debt. It's he who benefited from her actions. She's the one who worked for him. They have this relationship now, this karma between them. It's his duty to help his mother. And how many mothers you have? So every single person you meet, you are like the sun at the edge of the fire. It's your responsibility. It's actually, karmically, your business to help them. It's your debt. It's your responsibility. And yet, nobody even helps you. And I say one more thing, you know, even further, you will see that as you try, you'll even get people even hurt you. You know what I mean?
And you try
to help people. I mean, you have that experience. You know, mother cooks a good dinner, and the husband comes home and says, this tastes like, you know, and she just spent 3 hours cooking it, you know, and all she wanted was to serve him, you know, and to make him happy. She comes home and says, you know, I didn't like this, I want something else, you know. So what I mean is, it's also tied up with not getting discouraged. It means not being discouraged, even when the very people you are trying to help, hurt you, or try to hurt you for helping. Then somebody said in the other class, what about Jehovah's Witnesses? It sounds like Jehovah's Witnesses, you know. They keep trying to help you. All you want to do is... No, not like that. I mean help like... it's nice. You know, I always say a bodhisattva will never go out of business. There's always somebody who needs something. There's always somebody who wants something. It's a very pleasant occupation if you get into it. If all you want to do is give to other people, you'll never run out of customers. You know? It's great. Everybody will take from you. You know? It's a great occupation. Everyone you meet needs something. You know? So give them what they need. Give them what they want. As far as you can. Publicly.
Yeah, sure. There's an extraordinary emphasis in Mahayana Dharma, you know, especially in, like, when people first start learning about bodhicitta. And this is, I think, perhaps the epitome of it, this right here.
Not bodhicitta. Consciousness.
Yes, the development of bodhicitta. The epitome of, you know, wanting to take on the responsibility of helping everyone. It seems as if, you know, the higher states of existence, nirvana, for instance, seem to be quite thoroughly devoid of this kind of compassion unless generated first while you're down on this level. I mean, like, as if there's a danger of saving yourself and then just being quite content and not having the slightest thought for everybody else back here.
We'll get to that. There's a whole teaching on it.
Yeah.
And we'll get to it.
I mean, is that...
No, it'll come.
Is that something that's...
Yeah, that was thought, but it's not... It's going to come. It will come. And it's a very interesting question of what is the mechanism that gets somebody out of nirvana onto a bodhisattva track. What is it that triggers that? What could make you want to be a bodhisattva if you're already in Fat City? You know what I mean? And it's a very beautiful teaching. Okay, we'll get there. By the way, that's why I kind of don't like to see the translation universal responsibility for bodhicitta, because really it's the step before that which is really, you know, it kind of would confuse you.
Universal.
Some people say that for the number seven. Actually, number six is that same responsibility. It's the cause of bodhicitta. Number seven is Jhansan, you know it. Lam number what?
Two.
Principal path number two. Principal path number two. Obviously that's a result of this kind of thought. I will save them myself. And then finally you get this real wish that how is this different from this? Not really. I mean, that is a division that comes later inside of Jhansan. But this is more thinking, I'll take responsibility, and at this point you understand, I must become a Buddha.
Conclusion.
Yeah, because only a Buddha can really help you.
It's the perfection of the latter, huh?
Yeah. When I become a Buddha, it's interesting, a definition of the Buddha, one of the definitions of the Buddha, is Dunyi Puntal, which means the minute you become a Buddha, this is very interesting philosophically, and it's presented in the opening line of the Kamalavartika.
Year 3 is section 4.
Year 4. That you, the minute you become a Buddha, you have achieved everything that other people need. So there's horrible debate in the monastery. Now, wow, I mean, there's no poor people? What are you talking about? If when you become a Buddha, you automatically achieve everything that everyone else needs.
You don't achieve it for them, though, except for
them. It's a difficult point. I mean, I'm not going
to... You have to go out and distribute it, then, I think is what
it's a Buddha. A Buddha, by becoming a Buddha, has completely filled everything he needs, and he has completely filled everything anyone else needs. It's very interesting.
It's the ultimate in philanthropy. It's the perfection of, I mean, it's like...
By becoming a Buddha.
Breathing
this one you want to. This one I also agree. I'm not clear on the distinction, to be honest. But I believe that in this one, you haven't quite stressed that you have to become a Buddha. By this one, you understand that you have to become a Buddha.
So this is not.
You remember that definition of bodhicitta? What was it?
Buddha mind.
No, definition of bodhicitta. You need to
understand. Faith and wish to achieve.
It's got two dhammas. It's got two wishes. One is focused on other people, helping other people, and one is focused on becoming a Buddha. I think this one is obviously focused on helping other people. But I would say it kind of lacks that idea that, oh, I better become a Buddha so I can really help other people. That's number seven.
Well, because you don't know exactly how it is.
Right, how to do it.
Yeah.
Also, I think a six has more perseverance, like don't give up kind of thing.
It has both of those ideas. Not giving up in the face of even resistance from other people. I mean, you can get disappointed. There's stories about bodhisattvas. There's a famous bodhisattva in India. I forgot his name. He was one of the greatest Buddhist scholars of the time. He was like in the class of Nagarjuna. And he was walking down the road and this demon appeared as a human being. He said, if you're a bodhisattva, give me your eyeball. So he said, okay. And he reaches in. You know, try it. he puts his fingers in and takes out his eye and gives it to him.
Okay,
and then the guy takes the eye and says, thank you very much. And he goes like that and he stamps on it. And he smashes it. And then he turns into a demon and says, ha ha, I fooled you. And at that moment, that bodhisattva, for a moment, he lost his bodhicitta. There's that story that he got discouraged. And he said, you know, if people are so evil and so crazy as to ask me for my eye and then destroy it because I'm a bodhisattva, it's too much. I can't take it. You know, I can't handle these people. And he lost his bodhicitta for a second. And then he regained it later.
Which is my question. Is number six someone who's still capable of being discouraged, and number seven is beyond?
There's that story. I mean, we'll discuss it when we get to the.
Also, six seems like you don't lose. You persevere. You want to help everyone. And seven, you're it. You've got the wish.
You have the true wish, but it's. My point is that it's focused at Buddha. You understand what you have to do. At number six, you're still, you've agreed to do it, but you're not quite sure what to do. At number seven, you're already focused on Buddha. Oh, yeah, the way I can really help
you. Like you did. It's the effect of...
Yeah, by the way, number seven is an effect.
Right.
It is the last result in that seven. Yeah.
So number seven is you have bodhicitta.
Yeah. Which, by the way, is a cause, right? It still becomes a cause for something bigger. But that is if you drew a cause and effect, it would be at the end of the food chain, right? I mean, that's the only result.
Pure result.
Okay. We've got one more thing to talk about. Then you go.
Can you just quickly say the cause and effect of those seven ones?
I knew you'd ask me that. Number three causes number four. The first three cause number four. Number four causes number five. Number five, six, and number six, seven. And you know, it's obvious. You think about it. Okay, one more. Do we have one more? We have one more to go.
You did seven.
This is number zero. When they give this teaching, they always say to get number one. You gotta have a big preparation step. There's a preparation step that comes before all seven. You gotta have something else before you can have this, even number one of the seven.
And how come
it
didn't come before?
Well, I kind of forgot to do that.
Just to keep you a little off balance.
To be honest, I mean, I have to tell the truth from the room. I can lie at work, but I gotta tell the truth. Okay.
You weren't kidding. You didn't
really forget.
You didn't
hurt. No, honestly, I forgot. Sanyo, I remembered about number two, and I thought, it's silly to go to zero now. Okay, say Sanyo.
Sanyo.
Sanyam is equanimity. Equanimity. An equal mind. All the people you see, you feel the same. If you see someone you like, or if you see someone you don't like, or if you see someone you don't care about, you don't like him, you don't hate him, you don't feel anything. You know, you meet him on the bus, you don't care. It's where you try to reach this state of mind where you're not biased. You don't like this person more than this person. You try to make it equal. Equal feeling towards everybody. Does it mean equal bad feeling towards everybody? No. I mean, it means like, try to make your feelings, if you see her or if you see her, you pretty much feel the same. You don't feel, oh, I like her better, you know? And the reason you can guess, tell me the reason. Well, that's one thing, but because whatever thought you have now has to come from a thought before, please. Why does that prove? Yeah, why does it prove that you should be equal to everybody?
Because everybody's been your mother.
Everything's been everybody's been everything. Give me a break, you know? You've killed me 100 times. You've killed me 1,000,000 times. You burned my fingers off 1,000,000 times. You know, you did every nasty thing to me I can imagine. And you've also been my best friend millions of times. You've been my mother millions of times.
Sasi Bhagi Jashime Tavshan Vira Vinci Nyende Kempadi Sange Shindu Mite Uwahi Jogu Nanda Shimba
Class 8.